If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
You're not that important. I can talk to anybody. It's like once you recognize we're all, you know, kind of born, it may be different circumstances, but we all have the same worth at the end of the day. You know, why does it matter if I'm talking to the CEO of a Fortune 500 or, the janitor? Like, what's the difference at the end of the day?
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. Today, we're joined by Brandon Glick.
Well, I'm doing 100 cold calls. I have my little cold call script, 19 or 20 at this time. And I start actually landing us business. Like, it was pretty cool. Like, looking back on it at the time, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And I'll be honest, I was at one of the top schools in the country and I was cutting classes on a regular basis. Taking candidate calls, going on meetings, again, pretending I had already graduated. I shouldn't say that. But
Brandon is the CEO of Quantum Search Partners in Virginia, where he leads a passionate team of tech and executive recruiters.
People get into like the business world and they put on their business hat and they're not genuine in those conversations. And for better or for worse, like I'm pretty much the same person at home with my kids and my family and my wife that I am with, you know, a colleague.
They've been recognized 3 consecutive years on the Inc. 500 list of fastest growing companies and have twice been a Washington Business Journal best place to work, 23 and 24.
You know, I'm only 36, but I've been doing this for 16 years now. Like it hasn't happened overnight. It was a progression. And for those first, whatever it was, from 2006 to 2014, it was just me and my dad building this. It was just those relationships. And I'm a big believer in the compound interest effect that happens when you just stay consistent. Everyone is always looking for the quick fix.
Brandon, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah. So I think I found you on LinkedIn, if I'm not mistaken. I came across a post where you were with Brent Orsuga and Charlie Safro.
Oh, sure.
How do you know those guys?
Yeah. So it's funny. So Brent, I just know initially just through LinkedIn posting and messaging back and forth. You know, there's a great community of recruiting company owners that I've met through some of the LinkedIn channels. And I was at the LinkedIn Talent Connect conference in Phoenix, I guess it was Phoenix back in October. And Brent just happened to be there. So we were texting and ended up meeting. And, you know, both of us have a very similar mindset and approach to recruitment. So I think it just resonated. And, you know, we still stay in touch quite a bit.
He's a great guy. So both he and Charlie have been on this podcast. And Yeah, brilliant. Like Brent's like really super motivating. And if you look at his video content as well, like he's got basically he's like a motivational videos for his industry, which and ours, to be honest. So
totally. I came from a sports background. And I think that's why I love his stuff. It's like, it's get up and get it done. It's, it's very motivating. So
definitely.
You know, as a fellow recruiter, I love seeing that.
For sure. And then I was reading on your LinkedIn profile that you've been with Quantum Search Partners for 18 years, but you do not look old enough, my friend.
Sure.
So there must be a story there. How did you get into recruiting?
Sure. So I have a kind of a, I would call it a very unique story, although I think everyone kind of falls into recruiting in some way. So take it back to 2006. I was playing football at Princeton and got injured my freshman year. So I ended up taking some time off from school to recover and some different things. And my dad was a one-man shop recruiter. So he had a very successful business. Again, one-man shop in the 90s. In the early 2000s, it was a lot tougher to be a one-man shop. You had vendor lists popping up. You know, he did a lot of work in financial services. It started getting a lot tighter. So he ended up, when I joined him in 06, we had one real major client. It was AIG. So at that point, I'm 18 years old. I think we were using, it wasn't even Monster. It was like pre-Monster job boards. And I was making placements. So that year, I think my first placement was a senior business analyst. And then just made a few tech placements from there. Fast forward to 07, 08 in the tech and the downturn in the financial markets. So AIG got caught up in that. He ended up, they wanted a hiring freeze. He ended up effectively losing that client. And it's now this summer, before I'm going back to school, he buys me a book of computer executive contact info. So this is, again, pre-Zoom info, like true cold calling from a book. So I'm doing 100 cold calls. I have my little cold call script. I'm 19 or 20 at this time. And I start actually landing us business. Like it was pretty cool. Like looking back on it at the time, I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but it was working. I think maybe they saw my eagerness and they just said, hey, let's give this guy a shot. So long story short, went back to school, played 4 years of football at Princeton, graduated, all that. And I'll be honest, I was at one of the top schools in the country and I was cutting classes on a regular basis, taking candidate calls, going on meetings, again, pretending I had already graduated. I shouldn't say that, but, and then kind of, you know, from there, you know, we, graduated. And at that point I had some different things I was looking at, but, you know, had a real kind of intense conversation with my dad at that point. You know, he wanted it to just be the two of us. And I was like, look, like, I believe in what we're doing, but we have to build this to something bigger. And it wasn't until about 2014, 2015 that we really started growing. But, you know, now we've been, you know, we work with some of the biggest companies globally. We have, we're up to 15 recruiters and growing, you know, been on the Inc. 5000 the past few years. And, you know, not to bring down the mood of the podcast, but my dad, you know, passed away a few years ago, but it was a, you know, unbelievable experience being able to, excuse me, build something together with your best friend and your dad.
Wow.
So it was really cool.
That's powerful. It's
pretty unique.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Listen, so there's a couple of things I wanted to follow up on there. So it's hilarious that you were actually recruiting while you were going to university and, you know, taking calls and stuff. So, but, so take me back to, so you made your first placement when you were 18?
Yeah.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
A little different.
Yeah. So what gave you the confidence? Because it, you know, it's funny because I had a gentleman in the podcast before, great guy, Pinnacle Society member, really successful executive search within private equity. And he's didn't really believe that someone young could hold, like would have the gravitas or the commercial just experience to be able to relate to senior leaders. And but I don't necessarily think that's true. Like how what was your approach when you're that you're that young to speaking to clients and candidates?
Definitely. That's a great question. And I'd love to speak to that person too, just to get their perspective. You know, I think I was I am and was a very success-driven person. And you know, I was home during that period of time with not a lot to do. And I was used to, you know, being a good athlete, doing these, you know, achieving at the end of the day. So it gave me an opportunity to do that in that moment. So I think that is partially what drove me. And I just went all in on it. Like, I think part of it, I was just so naive at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I saw my dad doing it. I mean, my dad would close deals, like sitting on a lounge chair in the middle of our, you know, living room, you know, from the time I was like 5 years old. So I think I just witnessed it. So I'm like, well, if he can do it, you know, why can't I do it? And it, you know, you do the research on the companies you're representing, you learn about the skill sets that you're, and you just dive into it. And I don't think age is a differentiating factor. I think sometimes it's confidence or like,
oh, definitely.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of it. And I don't think I was even that confident. I just think I was so naive to know what I didn't know that I just didn't care at that point. And I just went for it. And I think that's what made, you know, made it possible in that moment.
Great answer. I agree 100%. I think it is about, I do think confidence matters. Like, I think it's about your, here's how I look at it, Brendan. I think that by being born on this planet, I am equal to any other person. I don't care what their job title is. Now, there's people who know a lot more than me, for sure. And there's people who are more senior than me in terms of like their job title and they're maybe running a big company. But ultimately, it's one human being talking to another. And like, and if I'm sincerely curious about that person, I want to learn from them, I also think that I can bring something to the table to them, then the focus is just on how do we connect here? And, you know, that becomes the focus rather than fixating on, well, I'm here and they're up there. So
totally.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, it's interesting. Like my dad gave me this advice at one point, and I think I was literally listening to a podcast where I think Kobe Bryant said something very similar, but it's effectively like, you're not that important. So once you recognize that, it's like, oh, so nobody's that, like, I can talk to anybody because we're all like, it's exactly what you just said. It's like, once you recognize we're all, you know, kind of born, it may be different circumstances, but we all have the same worth at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, why does it matter if I'm talking to the CEO of a Fortune 500 or, you know, the janitor? Like, what's the difference?
Exactly. And also, I think that a lot of leaders like talking and sharing what they know.
Definitely.
To potentially someone younger as well. So it's almost like they're, although they may be a client, they're in a sense a mentor as well, right? They
totally.
Like sharing their knowledge and experience and wisdom and everything else. So,
Did this thing quite often at that point where I would effectively be very open with what I don't know.
Yes.
And I'd be talking to candidates and I'd be asking them, hey, can you educate me? Like, I'm fairly new to this. You know, I think that this is the skill set this company is looking for. Like, can you talk me through how you're doing this and explain it back to me? And it was also a way to vet if a candidate really knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
So it was pretty interesting. Like, I was learning and also getting better at vetting candidates at the same time.
Yes.
And I think some of that, like, I'll call it naivete or whatever you want to, how you want to frame it. But that really, I think, drove some of that, you know, hey, this is a guy we might want to work with.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you and your dad, you know, two against the world, right? Now you had the vision. Your dad was happy as a solo producer, but
yes.
You had a vision that was bigger than that. Talk me through the recession and then how you adapted to that, because AIG, I remember, was one of the main
culprits.
The culprits, exactly, behind the whole crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly your big client goes away. What happened next?
Sure. That's a great question. So obviously financial services was not a viable market at that point. So what we ended up doing, first of all, I with this book of computer executives, I initially was just reaching out to anybody that would talk to me. So I was just going through, looking in our region, ended up basically was looking at New York down through Virginia, and was reaching out to anybody I thought looked interesting. It doesn't matter what company it was. What we ended up doing over time is we got into a health IT company. And at that point, health tech was starting to boom a little bit. You had a lot of the EHRs emerging. You had a lot of really interesting kind of, patient engagement and patient education platforms coming out. So I got into one or two of those companies. And then initially, that was my main focus. So I became effectively like a health IT recruiter for a period of time. That was the main target. And that's how we started building the business. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really until I moved from New York, New Jersey area to DC in 2014 that we really started branching out. And, you know, now we do work with, you know, we work with Fortune 500s. We work with a ton of the major consulting firms, several startups across cybersecurity, health tech, fintech, and a lot of mid-market as well. Like our focus has stayed specific on in certain areas, but like the industry has brought in quite a bit. But I think initially, as we were building, that focus was really critical.
Okay, awesome. So tell me about the business development approach and strategies in the early days, and then like cold calling through a book of computer executives versus, you know, how you do things today.
Definitely. So it's interesting because that cold calling piece, I would say, was fairly short lived. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening is we brought in a few clients, and you know, for better or for worse, I've always been very focused on relationship development and keeping in touch with people. And what we found over time is that, you know, we'd be working with a VP of HR or director of engineering that, you know, we had a great relationship with, we placed some top candidates with, and then they'd move and go elsewhere and they'd bring us with them. So from 2010, 2011 until really up until about 2023, I don't want to say all of our business has been referrals, but as I look through we keep tabs on all of this. As I look through our clients, almost 85 to 90% of them have been through referral. And we've worked with close to 200 companies at this point.
Wow.
It's been delivering at a high level. keeping in touch, like placing a candidate and then keeping in touch with them, you know, wanting to see their progression through their career and truly, truly caring. Like, it's not just about getting more business. It's about actually wanting to see these people succeed. And that's lent itself up and again, up until about 23, when the tech market really got hit. That was, I mean, for better or for worse, that was how we built the business, was through referrals and just delivering really well and staying in touch with people.
Okay. I want to do a deep dive on this because you guys have built a $5.5 million business almost entirely on referrals. Mm-hmm. And I would love to understand the strategy behind that, because I think most recruiters, I mean, there's always bad actors in every industry, sure, right? But I think the sort of people who listen to this podcast, they want to do a good job, right? They are delivery focused. They're like wanting to operate with high quality.
Sure.
And of course, who doesn't want referrals, right? That's the best kind of business. But you've found a way of leveraging those relationships and those referrals to scale from two people to, you know, a team of 15 recruiters, which is phenomenal. So, you know, can you break down that strategy a little bit for me?
Sure. And I didn't mean, so we're 12 recruiters, three back office.
Got it. Okay.
Team of 15. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, it's been interesting. I think a big part of it has been, I mean, delivery is important. You have to deliver.
Yep.
Excuse me. That's number one. But it really has just been the relentless follow-up. Like, we have candidates that we placed 10 years ago, and we might not do any new business with them for 7, 8, 9 years. And it's that 10th, 12th check-in that gets you to that, you know, to that referral that gets you business. And I think that, like, part of it is, you know, maybe is the business development piece of it, like having that in the back of your mind. But in reality, it's like, I don't know, it just has seemed like truly caring about the people you're placing and the companies you're representing, and then just following up relentlessly, not in a way that's asking for business, in a way that's just genuinely showing you care about the people you're working with. Like, that has lent itself to a lot of these referrals. I mean, you have to think about this too. I've been, you know, I'm only 36, but I've been doing this for 16 years now. Like it hasn't happened overnight. It was a progression. And for those first, whatever it was, from 2006 to 2014, it was just me and my dad, you know, building this. It was just those relationships. And I'm a big believer in the compound interest effect that happens when you just stay consistent. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone is always looking for the quick fix. Yeah. And even as, we've shifted some of our strategy, because obviously 2023, the tech industry took a hit. Yeah. A lot of the major clients we work with, you know, which include consulting and early stage tech, those two specifically got hit really hard. And historically, that's about 50 to 60% of our business. So, you know, thankfully, we were able to bounce back and find some new areas of growth. So we were able to make it through that period pretty successfully. But I mean, it took a shift in mindset. And we went from, you know, just doing referrals and relationship building and some outreach, but kind of here and there, to, hey, we need to double down, not just in relationships, not just in, you know, cold outreach, not just in posting, not just in, you know, reverse marketing. Like, it's all of these things combined. And it's not doing it for a week. It's doing it consistently over 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. And, you know, that's when the results start happening. So I'll be honest, 23 was a tougher year, I think, for a lot of people in recruiting.
Yes,
by the end of 24, like, our fourth quarter in 24 was our best quarter, our best fourth quarter ever. And it was our top three quarters in our history. So I think it's just one of those things. It's like, you don't see it immediately. You see it 12 months later, the effects of that hard work.
Brandon, I'm so glad you said that. It's funny. I had, you know, the compound interest analogy you gave. I had that exact conversation earlier today with one of our coaching clients.
Oh, really?
And and they were saying, you know, I feel like we're doing so many things right, and it's just not, you know, we're not getting traction. Like, and he is doing a lot of the right strategies and tactics. And I said, listen, you are doing the right things. We just need to keep it up and be consistent, because, you know, this is like going to compound. Mm-hmm. And right now it's like doesn't feel like much is happening, but it is. And, it, you know, the graph is about to go like that.
Yes.
So, you know, do you need to hang in there? And that's more or less exactly what you just described. I want to circle back, though. I wrote down the word relentless follow-up. What does that look like?
So, you know, maybe the relentless, it's interesting. I was just talking with my colleague about the word intensity. Because I think intensity can be like perceived as a really good thing or a negative thing.
Right.
And I think controlled intensity is a superpower.
Yes.
At the end of the day, you know, staying focused but not getting attached to the outcome. It's the same thing with the follow-up. Like when I think of relentless follow-up, I'm not saying bother someone 15 times a week with the same message over and over again. I'm saying if you're building a relationship, make sure you're following up with that person 3, 4, 5 times a year just to see how they're doing, just to check in and make sure they're, excuse me, I'm a little cold, so pardon that. But, you know, make sure that they're, you know, that they're happy where they are, that they feel supported. Like, that's what I mean by relentless follow-up. Like, a lot of times I see it with even our own team when they're following up. It's like, oh, I followed up with that person 9 months ago. We're good. It's like, it's been 9 months since you spoke to that person. A lot can happen in that time. So, maybe the relentless, it's more of a mindset than actually the approach. But when I say relentless, I really mean consistency.
Yeah, definitely. And consistently over time as well, because you're describing some of these like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years of follow-up, right? So it's...
Well, nothing's better than seeing like a product manager you place or a software engineer, and then 5 years later, they're the director of product or director of engineering. Then they're a hiring manager at that point. Like, who are they going to go to? Like, it's funny because I often see people trying to sell recruiting services as if we're a product or as if we're selling software. And it's a completely different process. Like, at the end of the day, you're selling yourself, more than anything. You could be at the best recruiting firm possible. But if you're not, like, if they don't want to work with you, you're not going to win that business.
Absolutely true. So you've mentioned like placed candidates. So that's obviously one of the types of people that we want to keep in regular contact with. Who else is on that list of people that you are following up with and nurturing that relationship?
Totally. So, I mean, clients as well, you know, even existing clients, you know, I feel like a lot of times recruiters get so locked in on the immediate opening in front of them, and they lose track of the long-term relationship, the long-term business development that comes from really working an account.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, that follow-up, checking in, you know, seeing if there's anywhere you could add value beyond the just making a placement. Like, that's the difference makers. And we've done things that are a little bit out of the box. Like, we tend to focus in a few key areas, so like tech recruitment, HR, a few different, finance and accounting, a few specific areas. But if we're working with a candidate that's really strong or like has a great background, we'll actually share resumes with no fee attached. Like, unless we're working on that opening specifically or it's right in our wheelhouse, like, we're more than happy to just, use our introductions and use our influence to help people land jobs, because we're a big believer in, you know, the more good stuff you put out, the better it is for everybody. And a lot of times, like, you're not doing it just because it comes back as, you know, in terms of new business, but it's like, how can you really add value to your clients and build a real relationship? So it's like doing those things that other companies might not think to do, you know, have made a difference long term.
That's cool. That's awesome. So you've got, obviously, your existing clients, you've got candidates you place. Are there any other types of people that you're putting yourself in regular contact with?
Sure. So if, we get reached out to a lot by candidates that are looking. Mm-hmm. So I actually keep I call it a free agent list. So it's about 25 to 30 people that I'll keep at any given time that are actively looking. These are typically going to be kind of director and above candidates, but they don't have to be. They just have to be someone that I think, hey, this person has a lot of potential. Like, I could see this person representing one of my clients well. Someone I just want to stay in touch with. And yeah, I'm a big sports guy, so that's why I call it my free agent list. But that's been really helpful, because what I've seen is when you go out of your way to help people and they're like, when they need support, people remember that. Not everybody does. But it's also just a chance with our job. Like, you do have to be at times so focused on closing the deal and the fees and all that kind of stuff, like to actually have a chance to give back in a meaningful way, you know, help people in their career journey, like maybe help someone when they're down. Like it's really mm-hmm. cool. And it does tend to help your business overall to do those things.
Yeah. Long term, it definitely does. I think recruiters feel so much, we're under time pressure, deadlines, yes. targets. And this active candidate who you can't really help right now feels like, I don't have time to spend 30 minutes with this guy helping him with his resume or whatever. So but obviously you've got a much more of a long-term mindset to that.
Totally.
Do you have a sort of certain number of hours per week or per month you're doing kind of pro bono stuff like that, which may or may never really come totally. Back to you?
Well, it's interesting. I guess I've never thought about it as pro bono. I think about it as, you know, we're putting our name out, like it's marketing for us at the end of the day.
Okay.
Like we're getting our name out there to more people that could potentially be in a position of influence at some point.
Yes.
You know, and we get to help people at the same time. Yep. And, you know, I'm in a unique position too. I mean, I'm the owner of the business, you know, the CEO. Like I'm not necessarily as involved in the day-to-day sourcing and recruiting and delivery anymore.
Yep.
So like if I was a recruiter doing this, I would maybe slot maybe 2 hours a week to having these conversations. Like I wouldn't want to make my whole calendar this. I'm in a different scenario because my main priority is building relationships and driving new business to my firm.
Yeah.
So it's a little different, but I still think it's an important thing to consider as you're looking to build your book of business as a new recruiter or someone that wants to go from recruiter to account manager, you know, et cetera.
Fantastic. Love that. So you've got this mindset of building relationships over time and never losing touch with people, the relentless follow-up. And how many touch points per year is that? And what's the channel? Is it the phone? Is it email?
Sure.
Like, really paint a picture
sure.
for me.
Sure. That's a great question. You know, so I think typically it's anywhere from like 4 to 6 touch points a year. Mm-hmm. And it's a mix of things. It's email. It's just picking up. Like I'm a big believer, if you have a relationship, just pick up the phone and call.
Yeah.
If it's someone I haven't talked to in a while, maybe I'll shoot them a text, you know, check in, hey, let's grab 15 minutes when you have time today. I don't really overthink it. And I think that's part of it too. There's so much overthinking goes into BD and like, do I have the perfect process? Am I doing everything correctly? Like sometimes you just have to let it rip, and, you know, as you know, I hate to put it that bluntly, but, that's a big part of it. Like I see that's the biggest factor, even with my team, that holds them back. I always hear, well, I don't know how to do it the right way. I don't know the perfect messaging. Like you can do things to make your messaging much more effective. And I'm sure we'll get into outbound and some of the things we're doing the past couple of years to increase our book. But like at the end of the day, you just have, it's just doing it, you know, it's doing the follow-up, holding yourself to it. And I'll be honest, like I keep a Excel spreadsheet. Like there's not like a, like we have a great ATS that we use, Crelate, but like as far as this type of follow-up, I just have a spreadsheet with hundreds of people in it, and I'm constantly checking this thing. When's the last time I touched base with this person? How am I going to follow up with them? And you just make sure you're checking that off consistently.
Okay, so that's really interesting. It's super low tech. Like you've got a spreadsheet, right? And you're just not overthinking it. You're just like, hey, I've not spoken to that person for a while. Let me shoot them a quick text and follow up with a phone call. And I think you're so right. It's easy to get paralysis by analysis. I'm mm-hmm. guilty of that myself, where I want it to be like all perfect before I, you know, initiate. And that's not the right approach, right? So I think that's powerful.
We have done like the SDR thing. We've hired multiple SDRs. We've had like more BD focused folks. We've brought folks out of tech to help us with these things. Mm-hmm. And I've just recognized over the years that it's like I mentioned, like this isn't software sales. Mm-hmm. You're selling yourself. You're selling your company's values at the end of the day. And a lot of it is just talk until you actually get in the ring and deliver.
Yeah.
But like, I think that's been the wake up call. So it's like, even with our outbound, like we have found ways to automate and increase our volume of outreach, but like we're still doing it in a way that we can personalize messaging. We can, you know, throw the PS about, you know, something interesting we saw about that person's background. Yeah. We can call out the specific company and their values. Like there's ways of doing things where you bring in tech to automate, but you also deliver the relevance, you know, so relevant clients, and also the personalization. And I think in our business, especially now when it's so easy to just send thousands upon thousands of emails and messages, like it's the only way to cut through the noise.
I agree 100%. It's funny. So you mentioned Crelate. I was just on their podcast. It came out this week, the Full Desk Experience with Courtney Harmon. And I'd love to talk about outreach and personalization in a second. I just want to really make sure we nail down this relentless referral process that got you like 80% of the way to where you are today. If you've got hundreds of people on your kind of keep in touch list, how does that break down in terms of like, and your touch point and your 4 to 6 touch points a year, how many is that per week that you need to be intentional about reaching out to?
That's a great question. So I actually do this thing too, again, very low tech in a lot of ways, but I just set reminders in my calendar. So I set it before, like before the day starts, like as a reminder. And as soon as I talk to that person, I'll set it for, okay, 2 months down the line, check in with this person, follow up. The volume, it depends. So, you know, there may be hundreds. I mean, honestly, there's probably close to 1,000 plus people on this list. Yeah. You know, there are ways to go through that and know, okay, this is someone that I have a really strong relationship with. And that I want to check in with 4 or 5 times a year, because I know we really have a bond. We connected. Like this is someone that's going to advocate for me. This is someone I care about and I want to see them succeed in the same way. And then you have like a second tier of follow-up. And, you know, maybe that's 2 touch points a year, 3 touch points a year. That's a little bit of a colder, like you have a relationship, you've connected. It might be a VP of HR you worked with a few years ago, but you're not necessarily as close.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's just like it's segmenting in some ways.
Totally.
And like during the week, probably do anywhere, probably around 50 to 60 outreaches a week. And sometimes, again, it's just like a message. Hey, just thinking about you. Hope you're doing well. Like it doesn't always have to be a call. It doesn't always have to be a like a full blown catch up.
Yeah.
But just sending that note, letting them know you're thinking about them, I think is very important.
This is awesome. Really, really good. I can see why it's work. You know, a lot of people throw around the word, it's all about building relationships, right? And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say their success is from building relationships, but it's sort of overused and it's become a platitude. Like what, how specifically do you build those relationships? And that's what you've done a great job of, of explaining.
Well, I think it's interesting too, though. Like I think people get into like the business world and they put on their business hat and they're not genuine in those conversations. And for better or for worse, like I'm pretty much the same person at home with my kids and my family and my wife that I am with, you know, a colleague. And, you know, that doesn't always play, but in a lot of instances it does. And when it does, it really resonates. So I think that's part of it. Like you're not getting any BS with my team. And when you work with us, I think that's a big part of it. Like it's being your true self in those conversations, you know, is where the impact starts to happen.
This is cool, Brendan, because, I totally get that. And I think that also would distinguish you from many other recruiters who are feeling like I need to get something out of every conversation. I need to advance this. I need to get a lead or a name, a referral, an order, which I understand because that's probably my inclination as well, is like you're competitive, you're results driven and you're, but it sounds like your mindset is different. So like when you're approaching that conversation, what is it you want to achieve on that call?
Yeah, good question. So one of my colleagues, Zach, always mentioned this to me. I think it's a great quote. It's those who appear hungry will starve.
Okay.
And I think it really resonates. It's like if you're on a conversation and they can sense the desperation or you're just trying to get something out of them from that meeting, it generally doesn't work that well. Like you're not going to get the outcome that you're looking for anyway in those instances, unless they're really desperate on their end for good candidates. So I think part of it again is like taking a step back, recognizing that this business is all about timing. So like you could have a great relationship and they just don't have an opening that you can work on, or they don't need your help that year. Like that's just how it goes. So I think part of it is I've just been doing this for so long that like, what, I mean, I'll be honest, when I first got into this and was first got those first phone calls and cold calls, like I got to lock this in. Like my life depends on getting this, this deal closed. And over time you just recognize it's not about that in the moment, you know, deal necessarily or getting that contract signed. It's like, it's playing the long game over time, because this is a great business if you can just stay consistent to your process. Where this business gets really challenging is if you're constantly riding this up and down wave and, you know, oh, I'm really hot this week, I have these great openings. Then you forget about business development, you forget about relationship building. And, you know, that's where I see people really fall off typically.
Really interesting. So yeah. Brandon, I'm pretty intense, and I like this kind of conversation. I love, because it's like, you know, but I am terrible at small talk. I hate it. I feel uncomfortable. And like, what pointers can you give me in terms of like just being natural and conversational and trying to get to know people better without any pressure, without trying to ask about, you know, their business? Like, how do you have go-to questions that you find open people up?
Well, I mean, like, what do you like talking about?
I like talking about business and you know, vision and strategy and that kind of stuff. But that's not necessarily appropriate for a 2-minute like catch-up call, right?
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, it's interesting, but I've always been very curious. And like,
I'm
the kind of guy, I hate to admit this, but like, if you sit next to me on a plane, you might not like me, because I will try to initiate a conversation. Like, I hate to say it. And I've gotten better. My wife's made sure I've gotten better at this over time.
She's elbowing you going,
she's like, please, this person doesn't want to talk to you. But I think part of it is like, I am genuinely curious, like outside of this conversation, like I would want to know about your family and your home life and, you know, what your aspirations are and genuinely get to know you. And that's always been something, like, I don't know how to tell someone that doesn't like that how to do that. Yeah. But I think part of it is like, some of this job is fake it till you make it at the end of the day. And it might just be like, I don't know that I always like that. It might just be something that I've trained myself into.
Yeah.
Like, because it has been, you know, kind of a helpful thing in business. Like, the more you know someone, their whole picture, the easier it is to have a real relationship with them.
For sure. And don't get me wrong, I do care about people.
Yes,
I am interested in like their family and their kids and all that stuff. And we can, I've got kids, we can relate on that. I just feel, I find it awkward to like get into that sort of conversation, but I admire anyone who can. And I'm sure you're right. It is anything as a skill that you can improve at, right? So,
I mean, I used to be very shy. I mean, that's the funny thing. It's like, as a kid in middle school, high school, I was on the shy side. And I think it might have just been that shock period of, hey, you're 18. Here's a book of IT executives and start cold calling. And I think it honestly just shocked my system to the point where if I feel that like fear or awkwardness, I'm like, you just have to do it now.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. This is super interesting. So talk to me about the tech downturn in 2023 and how you guys have leveled up your outbound business development game to start, bringing in more business, not just from referrals.
Sure. So that's a great question. So, up until that point, I mean, it actually got to a point in 21 and 22 where like things were so good, as you know, and my job primarily over the past few years has been to drive business. Once we got to a certain headcount, my job was pretty easy for a minute there. So it was a real shock in 23 when all of a sudden companies that we had literally placed 25, 30 people for said, okay, spigot shut off. Like, we're on a hiring freeze for the next 6 months. So it's kind of scary, to be honest. Like, we have a lot of mouths to feed at that point.
Yeah.
And so we did what we had to do. And part of it, thankfully, I had a relationship in manufacturing, which is an area we had just started dabbling in it. One of our account managers had opened up an account or two in that space and had shown some success there. I had another client that, again, came from a referral that opened up, and we realized, oh, wait a minute, like, it doesn't have to be high tech for them to need, you know, this type of talent. And, you know, industries like manufacturing, I think about construction, healthcare, like you wouldn't necessarily, maybe healthcare is a little different, but construction, manufacturing, you wouldn't think of them as being high-tech industries. Like we're placing machine learning engineers now at manufacturing companies. Like
Makes sense, they're trying to
do everything they can to automate their processes, like make things more efficient. It's just a market we never tapped into. So we started doing a lot of targeted outbound. You know, thankfully we had a few clients that we could name that we were working with in that space, and which made it easier. I work with another coach who is a big believer in the importance of relevance. So as you're reaching out, not just saying you do it, but kind of showing that you have the client base and what have you. So when we're reaching out and we're outbound, and I should mention, we use tools for like Dripify and a few other things. Mm-hmm. I mostly use it to automate connection requests, not to automate the follow-up. We were doing the automated follow-up for a minute, and it was kind of hit or miss. Mm-hmm. So we switched to more of a personalized, because we were doing relevance, we weren't doing the personalization. I think we've learned over time that adding in like the true personal notes, things you see about their profile, their background, maybe they've been at the same company for 15 years. Like that's a really cool thing to call out. Yes. Or like they were a former, you know, there's so many different things to call out that make you stand out. Plus the relevance factor. That's where we've seen a lot of success. And it was interesting. Like when we first started doing it, I was trying to find the silver bullet. So for 1 week it was connection requests with a follow-up, couple follow-ups, you know, just trying to get a get to know you call. Then it was, you know, we never did reverse marketing. It was a little bit of reverse marketing, little success, you kind of hit or miss. And then it was, you know, trying to get people in our network to make, you know, more introductions for us more directly. And there's, you know, several different things, or like reaching out to startups that got funding and different things. And what we've realized is it's not one of these things. Like it's all of these things. It's these 3, 4, 5 things. It's still tapping your network, but then doing it every single week. And the difficulty has always been, well, my team is delivering. They're working really hard sourcing great candidates. They're working really hard building account relationships. How do they build that into their day-to-day?
Yeah.
So part of what we've done, and it's very low key, but effectively, like we have an account manager. So in our team, an account manager is mostly handling the client relationship and should be starting to get into some business development. Like we now have them picking a lane. So it could be manufacturing, could be GovCon, could be, you know, one of the areas we have a substantial client base. Mm-hmm. And they're just reaching out to 100 people a week, mm-hmm. or trying to connect with 100 people a week. You know, maybe they're connecting with 40 or 50 of them, and then just sending really tailored follow-up.
Yeah.
And it's not rocket science. It's nothing crazy. But when you compound it and you look at the, like the business we're building, if an account manager already has some good accounts and they're adding another 3-4 a year, they go from a 250K book to a 400 or 500K book very quickly with just a little bit of added consistency. So again, it's like, we're always trying to find the silver bullet, but there really isn't. It's just compound. How do you compound your relationships over time?
Brendan, this is 100%. I agree. This, I think it's human nature. We want the silver bullet. Like just tell me one thing. And people ask me all the time, like just, I know there's all these tools and there's lots of different, you know, strategies and things I could do, but what's the one thing that I should do and that's going to bring in the most business? And as you said, well, you need to do a variety of things consistently over time to get that compound effect.
Definitely.
Because you can't, like, by the way, you use the term reverse marketing, which is super interesting because I've only ever heard Australians use that term. Most Americans call it NPC marketing, most placeable candidate marketing, I think is what you're talking about, where you have a candidate that you represent.
Yes, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Reverse marketing sounds a little better.
It sounds cool. All right. So reverse marketing, you've got the LinkedIn outreach, you've got like 3 or 4 or 5 different things.
Yes.
And you get a little bit from all of those things, then that like together gives you enough new business, those new 3 or 4 accounts a year.
Definitely.
Right.
Plus, so, I do think when you're in that mindset, I'm sorry to cut you off, but
that's okay.
Like when you're in that mindset, it puts you in a mindset where I'm already doing business development that's hard. Why don't I do the business development that's easy and start reaching out to the people I know that I see post a job or, you know, just got promoted to VP.
Yeah.
Like I think it's very so easy as a recruiter to just be heads down trying to close placements, and you lose touch of, wait, I have a lot of opportunity around me that I'm not really taking advantage of.
Good points. Absolutely. you said a couple of things that were interesting. So relevance combined with personalization. Actually, yep. Do you mind sharing your tech stack? Like, what are the tools? You said you've tried a lot of different things. What are the things that have made the cut that you're still running with?
Sure. So, I mean, like every firm, we do invest quite heavily in LinkedIn. So we spend over 200K with them every year. And I think part of it is we just want our team to have like unlimited access to in-mails and all the tools they need on that end. We do have job board access and all that kind of stuff. Correlate has been great as our ATS. We're looking into some AI tools as well. Yep. So we haven't done like the AI note taking or anything like that quite yet. We've demoed a few of them. I don't want to say we're slow to adopt them. I just want to, like, we want to be cautious and pick the right ones.
Yeah.
And then there's even like we've started to look in some of these, like digital recruiter things, and as candidates apply, you know, helping with the screening process and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're big believers in the human element of recruiting. So we don't want to lose that in the process. And, you know, I've heard, I think he was on your podcast. Is it Mike Anderson?
Maybe.
Was he on your podcast?
Yeah.
It was someone, I thought I heard it on your podcast, but basically the notion of like your that first touch point is so important because that's where you're really finding the connection and you're really kind of doing the vetting that helps you towards the end of the process. So we're trying to figure that part out. But on the BD side, it's like, I mean, I wish we were doing some things that are more tech forward. Like we have Apollo, you know, for some sequencing with email and lead gen. We have, we use Dripify and some of the LinkedIn automation. But we're not super advanced at that end, I'll be honest.
So we use Apollo as well for email and Dripify for LinkedIn. When you start talking about personalization, I wondered if you were using like clay.com to leverage AI in your personalization, or is that still manual where like you and your team are looking at someone's profile, looking at your website, trying to find something that would be an icebreaker that you can say, hey, congrats, I can see you've been there, you know, at your current firm for 15 years, or... Is that are you doing that?
Oh,
manually?
Yeah, we're using our noggins for that. And we're doing it. That is the thing that I have found difficult to replicate. And it might just be that we don't have the right tools. So actually it's one of the things, you know, I know you're very involved in that. We'd be curious to get your take on. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it has been using tools like Dripify to connect, you know, automate that process. Mm-hmm. But then our follow-up and our outreach is very manual. Like we have certain templates and things that we use to make it easier, like the what caught your eye or the thing that makes that person special.
Yeah.
Like we're doing that by hand at this point.
Got it. So here's the question that if you, because you can't automate or use AI for everything, but you can actually do more than you realize.
Sure.
For example, like how long someone's been at a company and like get ChatGPT to turn it rounded up into the number of months or years or whatever, which a lot of people don't realize you can automate. So it does come across well, like, hey, Brandon, congrats, 18 years with, you know, with Quantum. AI can do that.
Sure.
So the question is, what are the things that if you had unlimited time and you really wanted to connect with somebody and show that you've done your research, what sorts of things would you pay attention to? Like what, as a human being, looking at their profile, what are the key things? And then is there a way to automate that? And some things the answer is yes, some things the answer is no. But so I guess the question to you, when you're looking for those personalization elements, what are the key things that you're looking there?
Sure. That's a great question. So some of the things we tend to look at is, you know, first, I was a college athlete, so that's an easy thing to connect on. Were they a college athlete? Were they involved in different things? Do they volunteer? Like, are there certain things? Again, like a lot of our team has, you know, volunteers at certain things and has an interest in that side. Is that a place we can connect? You're looking at career transitions, you know, someone that was in HR that moves into sales and account management, you know, like what was that, what's the story behind that move? You know, someone stays with a company for 10, 12 years, but has 8 different promotions at that same company. Like, tell me that story. I think that's part of the thing that's been most effective in our outreach is like basically saying like, hey, this is what we provide. This is why you should work with us. And also like, I'm genuinely interested in knowing more about you, like not just about selling to you, not just about your company. Like, let's just have a conversation and see what happens.
That's really cool. And like, how long would you spend per person? Like, so you've given a really simple, but
sure.
I think effective cadence. Yeah. So 100 connections a week, 40 people accept, right? And then you're going to do a personalized follow-up with 40 people. How long per person do you spend thinking about like, oh, this is what I want to mention?
Definitely. And I want to preface with, I didn't say this was the most efficient process, but it is, I mean, sometimes it is just doing the work.
Yeah.
So what we end up doing is like, typically it's in the evenings for me, like our team, you know, if I have my team doing this outreach, they're might be budgeting, you know, 3 hours once a week to just knock it out.
Got it.
So what we end up doing, it's, I would say maybe it's 5 minutes per profile to write that messaging. We do have some templates built out. Like on the relevant side, it's easy to have templates.
Yeah.
It's hard to have personalization built into a template. So that's the part that I think typically takes 3 to 5 minutes, proofread, send the message. And then on LinkedIn, you can actually star messages that you've sent. So what we end up doing is we'll star that message. Mm-hmm. It brings the person to the bottom of the list on the starred messages. And you know, once a week, twice a week, you go back to your starred messages, and that's where you do your follow-up. So we typically do cap it at 2 or 3 outreaches. Like, we don't want to be annoying. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure they saw our messaging. But at the end of the day, there are ultimately like close to infinite people you can reach out to at any point. So I do hear a lot, you know, 10, 15 touch points. With what we're trying to achieve, I think 2 to 3 tends to be what we go for. And it really is kind of manual. Yeah.
Yeah. So with the 10 to 15 touch points, I think it's a question of over what time frame.
Sure.
Right. And so like similar to your relentless follow-up philosophy, it's only like a handful of touch points per year, but it's like you're just going to keep following up. I think for me, the 12 to 15 touch points is similar. Like you might have a burst of 3 at the beginning to try and get a conversation going. If that doesn't work, you don't want to keep hammering them like
this. Exactly.
That's not going to help, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk to you right now. They definitely saw your 3 LinkedIn messages or whatever.
Sure.
So then like give it a rest. If they're connected, they're going to now be seeing your LinkedIn content,
mm-hmm.
right? So you are going to keep coming up in their newsfeed. And so that can help like kind of on autopilot.
Well, I didn't mention that either. Yeah. Like I've been doing quite a bit more LinkedIn content.
Great.
And just yesterday off a post I did, like I had someone that is a contact of mine, but I hadn't talked to in probably 5-6 months, reached out and said, hey, you know, love that recent post. Like, how have you been? Let's get together. And this is, you know, effectively a high-end tech executive in my network. Like that's pretty cool when those things come full circle. So it's like I mentioned in the beginning, it's not just one thing. It's doing all of the things consistently, which is the tough part.
That is the challenge. Absolutely. Yep. So I understand the personalization message. What's the relevance message? What's that sound like?
Sure. So if we're reaching out, let's say to a CIO, we might mention, hey, we build high performing tech and cyber teams on behalf of, you know, if they're in media, on behalf of several leading media companies. I might list out 3 or 4 of the, you know, entertainment and media companies we work with and do that work for. So that's kind of the relevance piece is like, we do this work. I might mention, hey, we just recently closed this X search with a very similar client to them. So if I don't want to throw out actual clients necessarily, but some of these are on our website, so it doesn't matter. Like if I'm reaching out to NBC and I'm working with Sony, you know, mentioning that we work with similar organizations, I think is important, and we're doing similar work and we've delivered for them. I think that is the relevance piece.
Got it. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. 100%. That is effective and, you know, something that we should do. So looking back at 18 years now, or 16 years, did you say?
Sure.
16 years.
18.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. And, you know, where you've gotten to, what's the next 18 years look like?
Sure. So it's funny, we've been talking about this a lot, and I have a great partner who started out with us as a recruiter and has now made his way up to president of the business.
Oh, awesome.
And he's really the yin to my yang. Like, he's very standards driven and very process oriented. And it's like the great complement to my occasional fly by the seat of your pants approach. And yep. It's been great in terms of reining me back and saying, hey, look, like, we're now at this point, we've gotten here successfully, but we're not going to get to that next phase doing the same things we've always done.
Good
so that's
point.
Where this renewed focus on outbound and true business development has come in. That's where even though we deliver at a high level, like, we haven't always been a very metrics driven organization. Mm-hmm. Like, part of it is we don't want to put necessarily volume metrics as the primary, because we are big believers in quality over quantity. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where there's a happy medium we're trying to find on that end. So part of it, you know, and what we're leaning towards is building standards across submissions, standards across, you start a project on Monday, how many people are in that, you know, in that LinkedIn project by Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yes.
What is the candidate flow look like? What is the follow-up process with your clients? And I think over time, our team has absorbed these things. They understand, like, the ethos and what we stand for, but we haven't fully put these things on paper to say, hey, these are our standards. It's more of an expectation, but I think to really get the best out of people, you need to lay it out for them in a clear way. And that's the next phase for us. And once we have that, I mean, we have a good business development engine. We have great delivery, you know, even how we're operating now. It's just, you know, building with consistency, one or two recruiters a year. Like, we don't want to be tech systems or one of these, you know, major companies. They're great. You know, they have amazing training, those companies, but we just want to be, you know, be excited about who we're representing, be able to turn down companies we don't want to work with, and just enjoy what we're doing and know we're making an impact. And I think part of it is just consistency over time.
Love that. I like the idea about standards, and what you said is 100% true, that what you got you to where you are now is not necessarily the same formula or strategy that's going to get you to the next level. And
sure,
part of maturing as a business is having the standards, the systems, the processes, mm-hmm, you know, nailed down. And that's, so we have a coaching program called Apex, which is for companies who are scaling and,
sure,
you know, wanting to grow from, you know, 5 to 25 to, you know, however many people, get to 10 figures and build a business that operates without them personally,
sure,
involved operationally, so that they have the potential of an exit. If that's what they want to do, they, mm-hmm, may not want to, but it gives them that that option. And what you're describing is 100%. It's like, you know, how do we create a culture where, you know, not only do we have, I saw values on your website, and I'd like to maybe finish on this, because a lot of companies make up words that they're going to call, mm-hmm, their values, and they put them on a website, right?
Sure.
But it doesn't really mean anything, and the average person in their company doesn't even remember what they are, right? It's kind of like lip service, that idea. But
totally,
if we're building a culture, we have to have a common vision.
Yes.
We need to be working together on shared value, you know, according to,
totally,
shared values. This is how we behave with our clients, our candidates, and our colleagues. And, you know, there's standards in, mm-hmm, terms of performance, in terms of,
yes,
how we do things, in terms of processes. And I do think that you need metrics as well. They don't have to be volume-oriented metrics.
Yes.
But we do need to measure stuff, right?
Sure.
Because how do,
sure,
we improve if we're not measuring what's working and,
definitely,
what's not working? And in terms of quality over quantity, the quality metric is like ratios, right?
Yes,
how many,
correct,
submissions to get an interview, how many interviews to get a placement. And if we know, both as a company as well as individually, what those metrics are, now we have the dashboard that we can dial things in to allow everyone to perform better, you know, with the same amount of effort. So,
definitely,
I've talked too long. Let you respond,
oh,
to,
no,
that.
Oh, this is great. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, I think I did hear this on your show. It's Jeremy Jensen.
Yes.
Who always, I mean, you know, we don't know each other well, but like, anytime I've ever reached out to him on LinkedIn with a question, gets back to me in 2 seconds with a really genuine answer. So, seems like a terrific person to learn from. And you know, where his company is in a way like where we're aspiring to get to and that level, obviously, of production. And he talked about core values and how they use that as a way to really keep standards at their company. And it's interesting, like it got me thinking about it a lot. And like you said, like we do have these values and listed on our website, but like, are we embedding that into our day to day? And that's something that we've really been focusing on, especially since 23. Like I feel very strongly about every person that works in my company right now. I haven't always felt that way, to be honest. But a big part of it is like the people that are working, you know, at my company now, like I want to be in the trenches with. They do live out our values to the best of their ability. Like it's really cool having that cohesion, and it makes it very easy to weed out people that just maybe aren't a good fit for your business long term.
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah, one thing I did want to share to mention. So we've always positioning ourselves has always been interesting. Because we've tried to go after executive search, and then we go after, because we do tech recruiting, go after all levels of tech recruiting. We do contract recruiting. And, you know, it's been interesting over time. I've recognized, like, we've taken a step back and realized, what do we do better than other companies? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are, if it's an early stage tech company, what have you, like, we do have a great track record with executive search, but there are companies out there, the Korn Ferries of the world and what have you, like, that's who should be placing the CEO at Pepsi Cola. Like, at the end of the day, that's their area that they operate in most effectively. Where we come in, and I think we do our best work, is delivering really top-notch directors, managers, you know, high-end engineers, high-end ICs. And it took us a while to get there. But once we realized that's our value proposition, that's when our business started really churning up again. Because it's like, we're going into this knowing, hey, if someone's coming to us and asking for that other business, we can just be honest with them. Like, hey, we're going to go and be relentless for you. We're going to go put in the work. But if you need someone that's placed 15 CFOs for manufacturing tech companies, we're not the right fit. And vice versa, like if we're going after an engineering search, we can say like, we do this, we feel confident that we do this better than any firm in the market. And it's just been an interesting shift mentally that's led to a lot more business when you truly know like what you represent and what you're good at.
Very well said. And yeah. I should have asked you the question, like, what's the business mix of retained search, contract, you know, maybe contained or, you know, contingent search? What does that pie diagram look like?
So, I mean, when I first started building the business with my dad, we were going more towards retained search.
Yeah.
And over time, we've just had, we just really enjoy like that next level down recruiting. Mm-hmm. Where like you're truly helping someone make that jump in their career. So they might be a manager and they want to make that step to director. Mm-hmm. Like we get to do that all the time. And that's really cool for us. And it's also interesting seeing the, like the amount, like the impact you can have, I think is greater because the volume can be a little bit greater in what you're doing. And it's also just something that we've learned over time. Like the executive search side is a lot of, you know, can be a lot of fun. But when you're working with someone that's earlier in their career, like you can actually make more of an impact on that person. So I think, at least from our perspective, and we're just really good at that space. So it's kind of understanding like what has, like, it's funny because I did this evaluation last year of all of our placements since 2016. So I was really trying to see like where we've made close to 1,000 placements in that time.
Wow.
Like where have we really stood out? And it just kept resonating. It was like really niche engineering roles that like no one else could fill in, you know, the 6 months prior, or it was, you know, very tough to fill kind of mid-manager director roles in product and tech. And like, it was, you know, it was sort of the roles that still need that specificity of an executive search, but they, you know, but they're not quite at that level. And that's where we just continually stand out. So I'm like, let me just go after this business more often. And it's been paying off for us.
That's a really useful exercise, actually, to go back and look at the placements you've made over a period of time. And what are the patterns? What are you the best at? And let's do more of that. That's kind of, it's makes sense when you think about it, but very, very useful. Brendan, is there anything we hadn't discussed that you wanted to share?
I think we're in good shape on that. And I mean, the only other thing, and I'm curious if you've seen this shift also, but we've seen a shift towards contract placement in the past, let's say 4 to 6 months that we haven't really embraced previously. And we had historically been a little nervous to go after that business. Mm-hmm. We do now have a great back office team in place.
Fantastic.
So we now feel confident to go after that business. And what we've learned, you know, over the past 6 months, like our contractor business will be, it's not huge, but we'll have over 20 contractors by the end of this month.
Fantastic.
It's a market, it's a group we're looking to keep building.
Yes.
Historically, again, it's been kind of as a client asks, we'll do it if it really makes sense for that relationship, where now we're going after it. And what I've noticed is a lot of times it's just like clients have a perception of you. And if you don't tell them what you offer,
yes,
they don't know what, like you can't expect them to do the digging for you. So that's been a big shift for us. It's like, I just thought we couldn't do it. Like we're too small. And in reality, it's just these companies didn't know we offer that. And we've just started marketing it. And all of a sudden we're getting some great, these aren't like low end, you know, it's principal engineers. It's senior QA, it's higher end contract roles.
Yes.
But yeah, it's been a great kind of boost to our business also.
I'm excited for you. That is great business. And I'm not seeing a trend of more, you know, recruiting firms doing that. In fact, opposite. We encourage our clients to be like, why aren't you doing this? Because that recurring revenue is like a game changer. And it also increases the value of your business. If you've got both temp and perm. And so my claim to fame, Brandon, is I worked with a really fast growing IT recruiting company in Europe. Yes. And I coached the founders and their kind of next level of leaders from when they were 15 people through to when they were 150 people with offices in four countries. And they were in manufacturing, IT, energy were their three main sectors. But they were sort of 80% contracts, and that allowed them to scale so much faster because they had that forecastable revenue. It's a lot easier to make that hiring decision to add to your team when you know how much, you know, money and profit you've got coming in next month and the month after that and the month after that, right? So I think you're on the right path.
Yes, and it's funny, but you know, pretty much everyone I've seen be successful in this level of recruiting has pushed me in this direction for several years. You know, we've been reluctant, and now all of a sudden it seems to be paying off. So
fantastic.
It's been cool to see.
Brandon, this has been so much fun. We're over the hour because there's so much we could talk about. But thank you so much for sharing your experience, your journey, and you've got some really unique things. So that was a lot of fun. I appreciate you.
I feel the same way. Thank you for having me, and excited to continue the relationship with you.
Likewise. Awesome. Cool. Have a great weekend. Take care.
You too, Mark. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.